From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. President Obama will be out of office at the start of 2017, but one of his latest big pushes is set to have an impact far beyond. The goal? To reduce carbon emissions 30% by 2030. There are many ways to do that. Renewables like solar and wind, more efficiency, more conservation. But right in the middle of that mix, looming very large, is natural gas. And in this era, that means fracking and a huge industrial complex around fracking. It will transform parts of the country. It will touch us all. This hour on Point, our future with fracking. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Do you see a boom squared? On the way, mega fracking, processing, pipelines. Is it inevitable? Can we, will we do it right? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. We'll go deep in this hour with a top expert on fracking and best practices and to a big environmentalist who wants the emphasis to go elsewhere, to wind and solar. But let's go first to Louisiana, where one of the biggest industrial developments in American history is on the drawing board for processing and expected further surge in natural gas production. Dennis K. Berman is business editor of The Wall Street Journal, the big chief. He also writes a column, The Game, on the future of business. His latest piece, looking at the natural gas build-out, is headlined, Are We Underestimating America's Fracking Boom? Dennis Berman, welcome to On Point. Thanks very much for being here.
Hi, Tom. Great to join you.
Give us a sense of the scale of what is going on down in the bayou here. It's kind of unbelievable. The single largest foreign investment project in U.S. history. It's got some, as you say, a little bit of Nazi technology, some South African apartheid in its history, a bit part for Iranian imams, and all of it about processing an expected flood tide of fracked natural gas. What's the project, Dennis?
Right. Well, it's a South African company called Sasol. And Sasol's doing some really interesting things down there, Tom. And, you know, most people have never heard of the company. And I'm the business editor of the Wall Street Journal. I'm supposed to know every company on earth. And I had not heard of Sasol. Sasol is the former state-owned oil company from South Africa. And what Sasol had to do, especially during its apartheid era when trade embargoes cut it off, It had to get more energy independent and create some energy somehow because no one would sell them oil. So what they used was a lot of technology developed out of Germany, largely perfected by Nazi Germany, and that was to convert coal into diesel fuel. They're now using much more advanced variants of that technology to one day perhaps convert natural gas into diesel fuel. Now, the industrial processes needed to make this happen are big, they're dirty, they're expensive, and by the time it's over, there could be $21 billion put into the Louisiana economy to build a plant that does that and also turns natural gas into a component used for all kinds of plastic things that are part of our everyday lives.
That before we get into turning it into fuel, potentially diesel, just that cracking gas into ethylene, as you report, that's the raw chemical used in plastics and paints and food packaging. And the scale of this project so big because the flow of natural gas has come out of the boom already and the increased flow expected is so big. Here's Bobby Jindal, governor of Louisiana, announcing the big package. This was back at the end of 2012. $16, $21 billion, huge new facilities. Here's Bobby Jindal.
Today I'm proud to announce that Sasol is now planning a $16 to $21 billion integrated gas to liquids and ethane cracker complex right here in Calcasieu Parish.
And you look at the scale, Governor Jindal and many others pretty excited economically. Here he is again.
When you look at the scope, you look at the size, you look at the impact, this is truly a game changer for our state and especially Southwest Louisiana. For years, this will have ripple effects throughout our economy, but it's also a game changer for our country. I think today's announcement allows us to make a huge step forward in terms of America's goal of becoming energy independent and supplying our own needs when it comes to our manufacturing base, our transportation, and other needs as well.
Bobby Jindal on the huge Sasol plant planned for the bayous of Louisiana. Dennis Berman is with us from the Wall Street Journal. We're looking at the coming fracking boom as natural gas figures larger and larger as coal is pulled back in the country's energy mix. Many would like wind and solar, and there will be that. There will be efficiency and conservation. But the expectation is for a lot of growth here. This single project, Dennis, I see you putting it out in front of us just to give us a sense of the scale. You're talking about vast new public roads. Give us a sense of just how big this one project is.
Well, it'll be about 3,000 acres in scale. There'll be the closure of a lot of public roads. A few dozen public roads will just be blocked off and turned into industrial land for Sasol. There'll be the movement of scores of homes in the area around Lake Charles, Louisiana, called Mossville, where they're paying people to leave their homes, and they will basically dismantle those homes to put in this plant. You know, I think it's really interesting what Bobby Jindal says. First of all, Tom, you should never let a politician get in the way of any big announcement, because they will find their way. If there's a dollar to be invested in their state, they will find a way to paint themselves in great glory. But I do think that Jindal does have a point here. As I was researching what Sasol was doing, what I found was immense plans for true big industrialization likes we've not seen since the 1970s in Louisiana, upwards of $100 billion of planned projects through the state, largely because that natural gas that's being fracked in Texas, also in parts of Louisiana, certainly across different shale formations through the U.S., that gas will come to Louisiana and power all kinds of things that you would not think possible. Paper mills, ammonia plants, liquefying that natural gas, concrete shelters, mineral processing. All of it is basically fueled by the cheap energy that comes from that fracking around the U.S.
You're right. We are building a Qatar on the bayou. From whole cloth companies laying new cities, fertilizer plants, boron manufacturers, methanol terminals, polymer plants, ammonia factories, as you say, paper finishing. You say the site looks in its sort of blueprints like a fearsome steel-fitted Angkor Wat. You've got
a little baroque.
Yeah, a little baroque and a little Southeast Asian, but why not? You've got economists very excited. Here's a Lauren Scott, Louisiana economist, says something like this makes your eyes bug out. What about the environmental impacts of this? The Sasol plant alone, you report, is expected to emit 85 times Louisiana's threshold rate of benzene each year. What about the environmental consequences?
Well, this was so interesting in exploring this this plant and what's going on in Louisiana. Remember, Louisiana remains one of the most impoverished states in the United States, probably second or third, depending how you count it, in terms of personal poverty down there. And there's been kind of an agreement, a social contract, that we will allow companies to come to the state and pretty much have their way environmentally for, frankly, the economic benefit that citizens in the state of Louisiana need, and a lot of them say they want. But when you look at, and I spent a lot of time reading a transcript of a public hearing held down in Mossville.
This is a little town surrounded by industrial development already that could just be really swamped by this one.
And it was just fascinating. You could see it sort of raw and on display, this real tension between the want for jobs, for economic development, billions of dollars coming into the area. Sounds like a great improvement for the citizens of Lake Charles. But then there was an underlying fear and past experiences that people had with other industrial plants there about bad air, bad water, cancer rates, whether they're related or not, who knows? But certainly people there felt like there was a connection, and just sort of a feeling that the citizens of today might be trading something that is expected or that we should be giving to future generations. That's how people put it down there in Louisiana. So to me, and I'm so excited that you're exploring this topic today, Tom, because this is the tension: economic growth, financial security, and yet on the other side of it is environmental harm and threat.
You quote Rufus Victorian, a pipe fitter there in Louisiana, testifying, saying, "I don't want to wear a gas mask to go to bed at night if this plant is coming in." Mm-hmm. But it's tough for a state, as you write, the biggest foreign investment project in U.S. history. I mean, that's, we're talking up in mega, mega, mega scale here. And that's just in Louisiana. That's before we look at the Bakken and the Marcellus Shale and other related development, you're saying, around the country. How do you justify that headline that Americans are underestimating what's coming in the future fracking world?
Well, it's not just in Louisiana, okay? It's all the way up the Mississippi River. You see developments in Kansas. You'll see developments certainly in Texas, Mississippi, all along the Gulf Coast. So $100 billion in planned projects, that's just Louisiana alone. When you include those other states, it well breaches $100 billion or more. And more companies want to locate in the United States because of the cheap natural gas, the great infrastructure, and frankly, our rule of law and way we do business here. I was just spending time with the CEO of the Burlington Northern Santa Fe Railroad, and he says there is a manufacturing renaissance in this country, largely for those reasons. So I think we should take some comfort and pride that people want to do business here. But we should also understand some of those side effects, like we saw for those folks in Mossville talking about how their communities were going to be changed. And whether we can make all of it come together, I don't know. But we're going to have to, because the economic benefits are too good and the environmental issues are still strong enough for us to really give them consideration to.
And how do we keep it clean? We will look at that. Here's the Sasol, South African company CEO, David Constable, promoting the benefits, talking it up. We'll hear a lot of this. Here he is.
We will provide the United States with world-class, cleaner-burning fuel, contribute to the country's energy security, boost downstream manufacturing capacity, and diversify the utilization of domestic gas resources.
And that's just one mega, mega project on the bayou in Louisiana. Fracking is on its way in a big way. It is not the only element of President Obama and the EPA's push for cleaner energy in this country by any means. But it's a very big piece. It's grown enormously in recent years. And it is now set, says Dennis Berman, to grow much more. We're going to look at what that means in this hour. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Talking this hour about the explosion in fracking still to come as President Obama presses for clean energy, mega fracking, and the coming growth of the U.S. natural gas industry. Dennis Berman, business editor at the Wall Street Journal, is with us. He's been looking at a historically huge project on its way into Louisiana right now. It has echoes all over this country as the United States reaches for cleaner energy. States given lots of options in the new package put forward by the EPA, and many are encouraging them to go to alternative energies, conservation, efficiency. But there's gas. It's grown a lot already. It's set to grow more. Here was the president talking in a weekly video address posted earlier this month before the EPA announcement.
One of the best things we can do for our economy, our health, and our environment is to lead the world in producing cleaner, safer energy. And we're already generating more clean energy than ever before.
And here he was in his State of the Union address in January talking natural gas.
If extracted safely, it's the bridge fuel that can power our economy with less of the carbon pollution that causes climate change. Businesses plan to invest almost $100 billion in new factories that use natural gas. I'll cut red tape to help states get those factories built and put folks to work. And this Congress can help by putting people to work building fueling stations that shift more cars and trucks from foreign oil to American natural gas.
The president talking natural gas, and lots of people are listening, investing out there already in a huge way. Much more to come. Dennis Berman's headline on a recent piece, Are We Underestimating America's Fracking Boom? Not what it is already, it's huge, but how much it may grow. Dennis Berman, please stand by there in New York. With us right now from Stanford, California, is Mark Zoback, professor in earth sciences, senior fellow at the Precourt Institute for Energy at Stanford University School of Earth Sciences. He served on the National Academy of Energy Committee investigating the Deepwater Horizon accident and the Secretary of Energy's Committee on Shale Gas Development and Environmental Protection under President Obama. He's also an executive advisor at one of the world's biggest oil field services companies, Baker Hughes. Mark Zoback, thank you very much for joining us.
Well, happy to be with you, Tom.
In the thinking about the planning for the reduction of carbon emissions that the president and the EPA are now laying out, how big a role will natural gas play?
Well, I think the potential for natural gas to play a large role is variable within the country. For example, California has largely stopped using coal, and it's already using natural gas. So, you know, it it can't reduce carbon emissions by switching from coal to natural gas. Other states, however, there's a tremendous savings to be made, and it's already been happening. There's been a shift from coal to natural gas in a lot of places, and it needs to continue. There's two big problems with coal. One is the greenhouse gas effect, the enormous CO2 emissions, and the other are all the other pollutants associated with coal, SOx and NOx and the particulates. You know, coal is a fuel that can be replaced and should be replaced, with now a cleaner alternative as we continue to build renewable capabilities.
So we know the states have options here. They're on different paths already. They're given plenty of flexibility under the EPA plan. But in aggregate, how much more natural gas production do you anticipate, or is the industry anticipating as it looks at this set of years out to 2030? Will it double again, more or less?
Well, natural gas is in kind of a funny space right now. You have to know that a number of the reservoirs that produce only natural gas are now not currently being exploited, frankly, because the natural gas price is too low for the companies to drill and frack and produce the gas economically. So the drilling activities have moved to the places where natural gas and what are called natural gas liquids, things like butane and propane, which condense when they're produced, when they're in a gaseous state in the reservoir. When they come up, they turn into a liquid. Those liquids are sold at a much higher price. And so there are a lot of areas where natural gas was produced just a few years ago, but due to the current low prices, it's not being produced. And as prices increase in the future, as gas is used more widely, then they'll come back into production. So the industry moves around to focus its activities in the most profitable areas.
Mark Zoback, you're the biggest expert we could find. We trust big experts to kind of cut to the bottom line for us here, and I'm going to press you to do that. Dennis Berman in the Wall Street Journal is saying we're underestimating what's coming here. The president's laying out an ambitious goal. You know fracking and natural gas like nobody else. How much of an increase are we likely to see if we're going to meet these goals in the aggregate in this country in fracking?
Well, I think we'll see more drilling than there's going on today. That's for sure. The real question you're asking is how the demand side in the United States, how the use of natural gas requires more natural gas to be produced than is currently being produced. All the activity right now is focused in what's called shale oil and tight oil, frankly, because oil is selling for $100 a barrel. Mm-hmm. So, we know what's happening in North Dakota. There's a tremendous amount of drilling going on in West Texas, an old traditional oil and gas producing region that's having a renaissance of its own because hydraulic fracturing is enabling old reservoirs that were previously uneconomic to be produced in an economic way. And that's happening. That's why we see in the paper that, U.S. oil production may make us independent of imported oil in just the next couple of years. So the activity has moved in a way kind of away from natural gas to oil reservoirs simply because of local economic conditions. As that changes, we'll see more activity in natural gas. But in theory, we could replace coal with natural gas in the United States and provide this bridge that the president is talking about while renewables are built up over the first half of the 21st century, so that by the middle of the century, hopefully we can be largely, into a decarbonized energy system. It's going to take decades to accomplish this, and that's what the bridge concept is all about, using a clean fuel as a bridge so we get where we want to go. But, if it's a bridge, there has to be on the other, something on the other side. We can't lose our focus on the importance of developing renewable, non-carbon energy sources over the next few decades.
A lot of people ready to jump on that natural gas bridge, others very concerned about what it will mean. Just last week, after signing new legislation to lift a state ban on fracking, here was North Carolina Governor Pat McGrory saying this would be a great thing for the state's economy.
We're going to unleash the resources of North Carolina and produce jobs in North Carolina and help our country become energy independent.
North Carolina going that way. Big fight going on in Colorado, here in Colorado Springs. Advocates, residents saying benefits not worth the risks.
It pollutes the groundwater and it pollutes the air. Even if there are a few temporary jobs created, It's not worth it.
And yet there's a big head of steam on this. Dennis Berman, here's Mark Zoback. He's a big expert on fracking. You know, and he's not willing to say pedal to the metal here. But the bridge is, if it is a bridge, Dennis, what does that mean in terms of a scale of further development around natural gas and fracking?
Well, I think the point I was trying to make largely about underestimating the fracking boom was the next order events, and by that I mean industrial development, and by that I mean the Louisiana plants I was referring to and plants we'll see across the Gulf Coast and up the midsection of the country. So I think he makes a very relevant point about the price of gas being the right incentive for people to get involved. But what we're seeing, I think, on a sort of arc of history basis is that as we do away with coal and power plants, which, as he rightly notes, is a very dirty fuel, and convert it to gas, that is generally a positive step for the U.S. To think that we can move to wind or geothermal at scale in short order is just not realistic in any way. So the U.S. air pollution standards and the U.S. air pollution quality has actually improved over the last few decades, largely because of new environmental controls, but slowly but surely the share of coal in U.S. power plants has fallen over time. So anyhow, arc of history puts us towards more oil production, more gas production, and more industries tied to those changes.
If natural gas rises in substantial part to replace coal, Mark Zoback, how do we do that without real environmental destruction? I mean, we read about the problems with water, that it takes a lot of water for this drilling. We read about the problems of escape of methane at the wellhead, a much more damaging chemical when it comes to environmental climate damage than carbon dioxide. And then there's all the development around it. How do we do this without swamping ourselves in just a different stew of environmental issues, Mark?
Well, there are a host of issues. There are community issues, the impact of all the truck traffic and the, you know, just the general activity of drilling and carrying out these large-scale industrial processes near communities is very impactful. There are atmospheric issues, the air quality, and the issue of methane leakage. I'll come back to that in a minute. Mm-hmm. A lot of land is used because you're drilling thousands of wells, and so there are ecosystem impacts and community land disturbances, fragmentation of ecosystems, and there are water issues. You know, where does the water come from? In some places, the water is plentiful, but in others, it's not. And, you know, where does the water come from? How is it used? And how do you dispose of the water? After you hydraulically fracture, you flow back the water. And when it comes back, in a contaminated state. It has a lot of salt in it. It has arsenic and selenium. And the water has to be either injected into a safe wastewater injection well, or it has to be recycled, which is actually the preferable thing to do with it. So there's no question that there are a lot of issues. But, you know, this is no different than any other large-scale industrial process, and there are always impacts, and those impacts have to be identified and managed. The methane leakage issue has come up in a variety of ways, and the studies to date have identified serious methane leaks. But interestingly, the large leaks, the biggest problem, is not associated with the wells. It's associated with the distribution systems. For example, one of my colleagues at Stanford, Rob Jackson, has found that the Boston and the Washington, D.C. gas distribution systems are leaking very severely. This has nothing to do with shale gas per se. These distribution systems are sometimes 100 years old. And so there are methane leakage problems. They have to be found. They have to be fixed. We had a large explosion in the San Francisco Bay Area a couple years ago. An apartment house in Harlem blew up a couple months ago due to a 100-year-old infrastructure. So there are a lot of issues. Methane leakage is one of those issues. It has to be, we have to work at it.
Do we get a net change in climate damage, climate change, if we're not fully calculating in the methane leakage from anywhere in the system?
Actually, a recent study published in Science shows that while, you know, methane seems to be higher, there are higher levels of methane in the atmosphere than previously thought, even if you were to ascribe all that additional methane to shale gas production, using natural gas for electricity would still have a much lower impact on the climate than coal. So methane is an issue, but it's not a showstopper. It's just one of the many environmental issues that have to be addressed in a responsible way to realize the potential benefit. We all know what the benefits are. We all know that there are economic impacts that are tremendous, but we all know that there's a potential for environmental impacts that are very serious. And if we're going to realize, you know, the upside, we have to get serious about the environmental impacts. And that's the good news and the bad news about the states doing it. The states want to manage this process. The federal government is allowing the states to do it, but they have to do it in a responsible way.
Peter in Groton, Massachusetts. Peter, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you too? Thanks for taking my call.
Yes. What's on your mind, Peter?
Well, I'm very concerned about the impacts of fracking and how it applies to things like the Cheney bill in 2005, where they kind of pulled back the curtain of environmental regulations with putting in pipelines. There's a huge pipeline that's being proposed right now that's going to go across the whole northern part of Massachusetts from Richland all the way to Groton, to Dracut.
And this is on out into New York State, Pennsylvania, all the way out to Troy, Pennsylvania.
Yes, and you know, really right now that, you know, this company has come in, a huge company, proposed this pipeline and really just thrown out this route and really haven't shown any type of alternative routes. And it's going through pristine parkland and conservation land and people's homes and underneath the Nashua River. You know, a lot of people, Marion Stoddart included, you know, fought to clean up the Nashua River, and now we're going to stick a pipeline under it.
Yeah, a lot of people talking about that in the Northeast, and of course it has its counterparts all over the place. Dennis Berman, you quote the South African company saying they're coming to the U.S. because they see that spider web, that network of pipelines all over the place already. Presumably there will be more if and as this builds out, Dennis.
There will be more. The focus is on Keystone because it's become a political metaphor. And because the U.S. has federal approval because the pipeline comes from Canada and spans the border. But there will be more pipelines, and there will be more pipelines because we now have a million barrels plus of oil coming out of North Dakota, and it needs to make its way through the U.S. distribution system to be refined and sold and turned into gasoline and all kinds of other things. So I think the caller's got some good points about tensions between those needs for pipelines and conservation. We just wrote a story in the Wall Street Journal about local water authorities filing legal suits against pipeline companies for exactly those reasons. So I think we should see more tensions and more lawsuits, but long term there will be more pipelines simply because the current infrastructure cannot handle all of the oil and the gas that's being pulled out of the ground.
Let me go to Louisiana, Gretna, Louisiana. David is calling. Hi, David. You're on the air. Thanks for calling.
I really have to think that you guys have to address the back end of these processes, the cheap gas and the cheap oil and the cheap natural gas that you're talking about doesn't address the backside of the equation, which is fixing up the mess that it creates.
Yeah.
So if gas was $5 a gallon, maybe it'd have a shot at fixing up some of the environmental disaster that's created in Louisiana, and perhaps people would use their vehicles more efficiently and think about when they use energy.
David, you're right there. What's the mess you see?
Water for our future generations for a short fix. Go ahead.
What's the mess you see right there in Louisiana, David?
Excuse me?
What's the mess you see in Louisiana where there's been so much of this development?
The mess is we have no wetlands left, and that's a result of the oil and gas industry. Now, listen to me. You brought Governor Jindal up earlier.
Yep.
He just signed a law. He just signed a law that said we cannot sue the oil and gas companies for the environmental damage they caused. The EPA rules have been suspended for fracking. This is ridiculous.
David, I really appreciate your call from Gretna, Louisiana. When we return, a big environmentalist joins us to look at the whole picture. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. We're talking this hour about the explosion in fracking likely still to come as President Obama presses for clean energy, looking for a bridge from dirty coal to a cleaner alternative energy future. And in that interim, a lot of people talking natural gas. Dennis Berman is with us. He's been writing up a huge plant, the investment by a South African company coming into Louisiana, $21 billion maybe, and that's just the beginning. Mark Zoback follows natural gas, fracking, and more from Stanford University's School of Earth Sciences. He's with us today from Stanford, California. We'll hear from a big environmentalist in just a moment. You can join us. What do you see coming in our energy future? Here was the EPA Administrator Gina McCarthy announcing plans in January to cut carbon emissions from the nation's power plants.
Our plan aims to cut energy waste and leverage cleaner energy sources by doing two things. First, by setting achievable, enforceable state goals to cut carbon pollution per megawatt hour of electricity generated. And second, it's laying out a national framework that gives states the flexibility to chart their own customized path on how they meet their goals.
A lot of flexibility for the states. Regulations to come along with that, we'll see. Talking with NBC's local KSBW affiliate in San Benito, California, here was Andy Chacarone of the anti-fracking ground group San Benito Rising, saying he worries about the adverse effects of fracking and doesn't think that regulations will be enough to protect the environment.
When you have regulations, it simply gives permission for them to go and do their fracking, and it gives them a roadmap. And then when something goes wrong, they can always say, well, we followed the regulations, so therefore we're not responsible for whatever has gone wrong.
Big energy future rising here. Mark Zoback, Dennis Berman, stand by with us right now from New York is Kate Sinding, director of the Natural Resources Defense Council's Community Fracking Defense Project, also senior attorney, deputy director of NRDC's New York Urban Program. Kate Sinding, thank you very much for joining us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Lots of flexibility for the states here, we're told. At the same time, there's a pretty significant goal. The president's talking about natural gas as the bridge to the cleaner energy future that he sees. What do you see that meaning in terms of fracking and pulling it out of the ground, Kate?
Well, I think folks are being unduly pessimistic about the potential for energy efficiency and renewable energy to play the dominant role and take the lion's share in terms of the reductions that we're going to see under the new EPA power plant rules. It's true that right now they're disadvantaged relative to fossil fuels, and that's for a variety of reasons, including subsidies and bad government policies. But under the rules, there are going to be financial incentives to really up our investments in energy efficiency and renewable energy. We believe that, in fact, it's possible to meet the standards that EPA has proposed with no increase in gas over business as usual. And EPA's own assessment, which we think is conservative, shows that there will be a reduction by 5% in the amount of gas used in the electric sector by 2030. That, again, is conservative, and we think that the rules can and should be tightened so that you don't see any increase in gas over business as usual in the midterm. And the real concern here for me goes back to what one of the other callers raised and what Dennis was talking about in terms of infrastructure development. The notion that natural gas would serve as a bridge fuel becomes very hard to accept when we talk about the kinds of investments that go into building out the infrastructure, the pipelines, much less these huge facilities like the one that's being talked about in Louisiana. That's the real risk, that we lock in natural gas for the long term, because once those investments are made, they're not being made in true clean energy, and there's going to be no incentive to move off of gas.
But you've got the President of the United States himself, you heard in the State of the Union address there, Kate, saying this is the bridge fuel, pointing straight at it. When you've got that big endorsement and you hear all the business anticipation Dennis Berman is reporting on for the Wall Street Journal, does it take on its own head of steam? It becomes inevitable.
I don't think it becomes inevitable, and it's my job to make sure that it doesn't become inevitable and doesn't become destiny. And again, I think, you know, if natural gas is going to be a bridge, the only way that's going to happen is by maximizing our investments in clean energy starting today and not thinking about some period of decades where natural gas plays the dominant role. We've got to start making fossil fuels play a subservient role starting today.
I'll come to you first, Dennis. No increase in gas over business as usual today. Is that what you're hearing from people in the industry?
Well, you know, what happens in 2030, I think, is going to be of unknown final destination.
But plans are being made. Dollars are being put down. You're talking about $21 billion they're looking to put down right there in the bayou.
They are. Well, of course, there's discrepancies between how natural gas is used for electricity generation and how it's used for industrial processes. I can say that the expectation in Louisiana is that there will be even more industrial development, largely based on that cheap natural gas fuel source. One thing to keep in mind, another environmental outcome of these developments are greenhouse gases. And that Sasol plant that I've been describing in Louisiana, for instance, will become probably one of the top 20 greenhouse gas producers in the United States in its processes of turning ethane into components for plastics,
cracking
as well
natural
as,
gas,
as cracking it, as well as for turning it into diesel fuel. So it's dirty work. And that's one of the things that's going to happen because of it.
Is it all signed off on? Is it all in gear? It's going to happen, or is it still under
review? Well, this is the really interesting part about it, that it's going to take some time to get all the permitting set, and building is going to take many, many years. But the real thing that will determine whether these plants get built is the price of natural gas and the price of oil. If we look at the Sasol gas to liquids plant, it is essentially an arbitrage between cheap gas and expensive oil. And if that dynamic changes in Sasol's detriment, then they will not build the plant. So it's a huge bet, basically, on where energy prices will be.
Mark Zoback, Americans looking at this big energy picture and trying to figure out where to throw their support, what to expect. I mean, Kate says, look, let's not even go there. She's not on board with the president's idea of natural gas as the bridge fuel. Let's go alternative energy right away. What's the potential there? And if there's a gap between potential and demand, what is it, Mark?
Well, you know, I produce all my own electricity at home with solar panels, and my next car is going to be an electric car. I agree with Beth. I think, you know, we really do need a very aggressive program to promote renewables. But when you look at the picture, not only in the United States, you have to look globally. The real climate impact is from the growing economies in Asia, mostly China and India, both countries that are almost totally reliant on coal. So if we go from, you know, the 2 billion tons of CO2 that we currently generate making electricity to zero, while China goes from the 7 billion tons that they're currently generating to 14 over the next 20 years, you know, it's game over. So this coal to natural gas as a fast way to do good, it's not a perfect solution by any means. We're still generating a lot of CO2, and there are other impacts that are very important. But it's something that we can do quickly to have a very beneficial effect. But it is not a perfect solution. I don't pretend that it is. And we can't lose sight of the need to decarbonize our energy future, both here and abroad. So in a way, we kind of all agree. And it's a matter of how the, you know, industry responds, the public responds, and how the government responds.
I'm having a little dickens of a time holding you right to the question, because I know you know these things. Kate is saying, let's go right to alternative energy. We don't need this bridge. We shouldn't go there. And if we build the infrastructure, we'll be locked into it. We're going to be in gas land, fossil fuel land for too long. And I'm asking you, how can we do that? Or is there a gap that requires this bridge, this natural gas bridge, and its infrastructure that Kate would rather not see built out?
I don't think we can do that. Otherwise, we're going to be stuck with coal for a long period of time if we don't utilize natural gas as a bridge. We're going to be using coal until renewables can carry the load, and that can't be overnight. That's going to be many decades.
And Kate? If there's one thing I can add about that, if you look at Germany, there's some really interesting things going on in Germany. They've pulled back from nuclear power. They want to cut their reliance on nuclear power. They want to develop renewables. But in their absence, what are they doing? They are importing coal from Appalachia all over across the Atlantic Ocean and burning it in Germany.
Kate, how about it? You'd like to go right alternative, and Mark says can't be done without staying in coal country.
Yeah, I mean, clearly nobody on this phone call thinks coal is a good thing. I mean, on this radio program thinks coal is a good thing. We've got to move off of coal. We're moving off of coal. We've got to escalate it and move to clean energy. I'm not suggesting that we can go to 100% clean energy tomorrow, but what I'm saying is when we think about the role that natural gas is going to play, it has to be a minimal role. We have to minimize its role. And that means that we need to not talk about massive new investments in infrastructure. We need to not talk about opening up more and more parts of the country, moving into people's backyards to frack. We need to talk about going all in with our investments for efficiency and renewable.
I think a lot of people are for that. Mark Zoback is doing it personally, but I don't hear these two visions lining up. I mean, can we minimize natural gas use, Mark, and have a bridge to the future you like?
Well, I don't think so. I think that's the whole point. And the amazing thing is that when you look at the rate at which the use of coal in the United States has been reduced by the availability of cheap natural gas and the associated impacts on pollution and, you know, on public health and on climate. And so we've seen the benefits in a remarkably short period of time. Just a few years ago, you know, coal was producing half of our electricity, and now the amounts of electricity produced by coal and natural gas are more or less comparable. And that can be achieved in many other places around the world. Now, you know, it's a sad fact that, you know, as we've used less coal, the others in Europe, Germany, the UK have been using it because we're not using it. So you know, this is a real problem. The world has a hunger for energy. The need for energy is going to double, you know, by mid-century. So we have to provide not only cleaner energy, we have to provide twice as much as we use today. Renewables are the answer. We can't lose our emphasis on developing renewable resources, but we need this bridge, and it's needed around the world.
There's that chapter right in front of us, attention globally. We hear attention in the vision, and a significant one, even right here at home. Reed in Asheville, North Carolina. Reed, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Thank you. Hello, Tom.
Hi.
My comment is in regards to the rosy picture painted by Mark and Dennis. I actually like that picture. I want to push more towards renewables, but the problem is the reality here, especially in North Carolina, is there is no move to regulate anything. We had two coal ash spills in the past 12 months in North Carolina.
Big,
and
yeah.
Instead of actually pushing anything, Governor McCrory is opening the floodgates for fracking, and a bill is in the works to make it illegal, a felony, to disclose the content of fracking fluid in North Carolina. So I just feel like there's a disconnect between, okay, let's use natural gas, but actually regulate it closely. I don't see that happening.
Reed, I appreciate your call, and you're there in coal ash spill country. We've seen the photographs, and you know it firsthand. I mean, Kate, what about this state-by-state flexibility that was ballyhooed at the rollout of the new EPA plan? Is that a recipe for success or a recipe for an environmental free-for-all?
No, it's a recipe for success, because the flexibility is in terms of how the states go about meeting their reduction targets. But all of the states are going to have to meet reduction targets. And that's really the beauty of this program. And that's what's going to change the dynamics that we've been talking about in terms of the trade-off between coal and renewables in Germany. When you get policies in place, and we'll start in the United States has to demonstrate leadership on this, and then we can talk about the rest of the world following suit. But when you put the right policies in place, that's where you change the economic dynamics and create the right incentives.
But Reed is there in North Carolina watching it actually play out, and he, you know, it's, that sounds rosy to him. He's not confident.
What's happening in North Carolina is outrageous. What the legislature and governor are doing there to dismantle environmental protections is absolutely unacceptable, and of great concern to North Carolinians and those of us who are watching what's happening there. But that's not going to exempt North Carolina from having to meet its reduction targets under EPA's rules. They're going to have to figure out how to do that.
Good luck to them. Claire in Madison, Wisconsin. Claire, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thank you. It seems to me so many people are against the pipelines for a variety of reasons. One of your guests said that pipelines are inevitable because the infrastructure isn't there. But why don't we make the infrastructure work? We need better roads. We need the railroads upgraded. It would be a win-win situation. It would be jobs. And then we could do the transport.
Let us pick it up, Claire. Mark Zoback, if natural gas is a big part of the bridge. If it's the bridge, Kate's not crazy about that, but what kind of pipeline build out within this country? Let's leave Keystone out for a second. That's a different issue, but do you see coming?
Well, obviously, there'll be more pipelines, and we know how to build pipelines safely. We just may need to assure that we do so. You know, again, it's a process that, you know, the technology and the issues are well known, and we simply have to do it right. The big problem I see is the existing leaky infrastructure, you know, cast iron pipes that, you know, are very old, 100 years old and more in some areas. So we need a comprehensive program to inspect, repair, and replace this leaky infrastructure throughout the United States, especially, you know, metropolitan areas that, in which this infrastructure was developed a long period, you know, a long time ago. This would be good for everyone. You know, we don't need more explosions in apartment buildings or in communities like we had here in California. And we don't want the gas, you know, leaking into the environment. Unfortunately, right now, there's no incentive for the utilities to make these corrections. You know, the lost gas is simply part of their cost of doing business, and they pass it on to consumers. So we have to get serious about fixing the infrastructure.
Dennis Berman, I'm struck. We just have a minute left here, but I'm struck by the tension that remains in visions of what this next couple of decades are going to look like on the energy front, even as we plunge into it. You've got these billion, super billion mega plans you're talking about up on the drawing board. Kate wants to see alternative energy right now. Mark says no can do. There's a lot unresolved here, Dennis.
There is a lot unresolved. I probably side with Mark. We will be using more of this energy. It will happen. There will be more pipelines. There will be more tension. There will be more jobs. It's going to be a complicated stew, but it's where America's heading. There is no doubt about it.
A Qatar on the bayou, Dennis Berman describes coming Louisiana. We'll see. We'll follow what happens there. Dennis, with the Wall Street Journal, thank you for joining us today.
Great
to have you. Mark Zoback at Stanford University School of Earth Sciences. Mark, thank you for being here.
Thank you. And by the way, I agree with Kate. You know,
bring it on. Bring on the alternatives. Kate Sindig with the NRDC. Kate, thank you for joining us.
Thanks very much for having me.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.